Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And today we're talking about home improvement. And John Freiberger is back with us. Great to have him back. John with Freiberger Construction Consulting. He's a registered home inspector, has 4 decades of experience in restoring old homes. So I hope you'll join in our conversation today. You may have a question. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And John Freiberger, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here, Larry.
I want to zero in a little bit to start the show on safety. And I know there's healthy houses. We hear of that term a lot. What do you think is a healthy house?
Well, that is really a good question. What we started out in the 80s and 90s, Larry, is we started hearing about sick houses.
Yeah,
a lot of
right.
sick houses,
yeah.
Mold lawsuits, which is why most of our homeowners now have a mold exclusion in their home policy. So we changed construction techniques in the 80s and 90s and made houses much tighter than they used to be. We started using was wood, all kinds of manufactured things. We started using all kinds of chemicals. Lots of things glued together with formaldehyde. And guess what? People moved into these houses. And they were living there in a soup of volatile organic compounds, formaldehyde, mold, mycotoxins, and they got sick. So where a lot of us started out, and my first big litigation in the 90s was settled for $26 million on a mold lawsuit, is a lot of us started out looking at sick houses. And we look at a sick house and we go, okay, what's making it sick and let's cure it. But until recently, we haven't had a good review of what is a healthy house. So the Department of Energy has come up with a publication that I got real excited when I saw it called Home RX, the Health Benefits of Home Performance. And Larry, this thing was massive. They found 3 million articles.
Amazing.
That purported to be about the health benefits of home performance. Well, a lot of them were harmless puffery put out by insulation companies and people trying to sell you something or other. But they did find 500 of them that actually were peer-reviewed, academically viable, had statistics in them. So they reviewed all of them, and then they took a look at it in 5 different categories and wrote this article, and it may already be up on your Facebook page because I know I sent it into your producer, so anyone can download
it. Jill's probably got it up there already.
Yeah, I'm sure she does because I sent it to her last week. But it is the beginning of taking a look and defining what is a healthy house and what are the actual benefits of doing things right versus doing things wrong.
And that report, that summary is 50 pages long.
The summary is indeed 50 pages long. And the last half of it, Larry, is really saying, well, you know, we're sort of playing Socrates here. Socrates said a wise man is a guy who knows he doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
Well, what this report says is, well, we do have some studies that are statistically significant. We do have some things to point out. And here's a list of 20 things that we really should be studying. We really need to start figuring out the statistically significant effects of what we are doing to the places in which we are spending the vast majority of our lives.
Yeah. Can you give us an example or two of what they've come up with?
Yes, a lot of them are no-brainers. The highest number of significant results appears to be in improved whole house ventilation. And again, this is sort of what you'd expect.
Yeah.
Put fresh air into a house, you're reducing the formaldehyde, you're reducing the mold, you're reducing the CO, you're reducing the VOCs. Well, yeah, people are going to feel better. And what they have found. And these are simple correlations, but they are statistical correlations. And they looked at the 0.5 level as being the cutoff. But there's a big effect in ventilation on asthma, as there is in several other areas. And we know that asthma is one of these things in the U.S. that has really been on the rise. And we've known for a long time that poor indoor air quality and poor outdoor air quality leads to a lot of asthma. So they have at least 4 statistically significant studies that show significant a significant improvement in respiratory health and reduction in asthma. And then even things like skin allergies, comfort level, reduction of CO, reduction of mold, reduction of VOC, reduction of formaldehyde, nitrous oxide, and then, of course, the big one in some parts of Wisconsin is reduction in radon. And, of course, with radon, radon is the second, perhaps now the first, leading cause of lung cancer. I know it's been fighting with cigarette smoking for some time. One of the results found that you were less likely to have a heart attack if you insulated your house.
Is that right?
Well, and exactly how that happens is that you have the heart attack when you get the monthly utility bill, and you don't. So some of the things are a little surprising, but yet they were statistically significant.
Man.
There's a study out in New Zealand that found that when you went to somebody's house, especially and generally, the lower quality house, the bigger the improvement, which is what we would figure.
Yeah.
But simply, they studied such things as healthcare utilization. So people with houses that had been improved were less likely to go to the hospital. When they went to the hospital bills were lower because they got out sooner. So some of this is not real well defined. And yet we have things saying to us that it is worth doing things using green architecture, avoiding VOCs, avoiding formaldehyde, insulating our houses, air sealing our houses. And you've heard me talk about this on this program dozens of times, properly ventilating our houses so that our indoor air is clean. So it does show us that the common sense things that we're thinking of actually work. We can statistically, in peer-reviewed journals, look at it. And it's also suggesting that what we really need to do is a lot more studies so we can do a real cost-benefit analysis as to what are we going to be getting back in reduced health care costs for the money that we're investing into our homes.
Interesting stuff. Well, I tell you what, we already have many callers online to visit with you. There's still one line open at 1-800-642-1234. So let's take a few calls, and we'll work in some more about this healthy homes as we move along. First, Dave in Eau Claire has something for us. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for the program.
Sure.
I have a 96 mobile home, and last fall I had a new floor put in the kitchen, and the contractor that put the floor in said that the sides of the mobile home is sagging, and they need the mobile home itself needs to be re-leveled. I guess my question is, who do I contact, like in the Eau Claire area, to come out and level, re-level the mobile home?
Yeah, there may be some additional things, footings and so forth, that may have to be sunk in there, too, I would think.
Dave, you said something about the sides were sagging. Did I hear that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So, like, the walls are bowing?
Like, the wall, the whole trailer, I guess, basically just after, 20 years, it finally starts to sag a little bit.
Okay.
Well, I was told.
I'm going to give you two pieces of advice. The first is, find a home inspector who knows manufactured housing and mobile homes. Now, you should be able to go to the American Society of Home Inspectors, ASHI, and then look at Wisconsin home inspectors in your area, and a lot of them are going to have profiles. And you can look up their, you can look up Larry Mueller, and there's Larry's certification, and then he says he's a specialist in manufactured housing. We want to make sure that we don't have structural decay and things going on in these walls before you spend any money on leveling and tying it down. So let's get it inspected. Then secondly, your mobile home would have come with manufacturer certified instructions on how that thing is to be tied down and secured. If you've got a Skyline home and it's a model X whatever, and that number plate should be next to your main electrical panel, you should be able to email the company and say, please send me the tie down instructions for this home. Then you can call any of the mobile home installers in your area. Give him a copy of the instructions. He knows you have it, so he's going to do it right. And then he can tie that down so it's done in the manner that is certified by the manufacturer of your house to make it safe in a major windstorm.
Okay.
All right. Three steps. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Dave. Appreciate it. Kevin in New Glarus up next. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a very old house. It's a farm Victorian. It's in the, 114, 115-year-old. And we're having sag issues in the rooms, and I'm wondering about the best way to re-level the floors on the house. I've heard people talking about that they brought in steel I-beams and they used jack plates and all that kind of stuff, but I'm looking for input from people that actually do it for a living.
Yeah, you have to be really careful when you're re-leveling a house. And, of course, the first floor is fairly easy to do if you've got an accessible basement.
Yep.
Often you don't need steel. In fact, you almost never need steel. Now that we have the LVLs, the laminated veneer lumber, that stuff is so wonderfully strong. You can cut it to length, and it weighs a lot less. But it's really great stuff. Many old Victorian houses were constructed as if they expected the people in the house to own some stuff, but not nearly what we have nowadays. Nowadays, our houses have to be able to carry 55 pounds per square foot. And you measure a 10 by 20 room, and you realize how many tons that is. Well, these old houses, people didn't own all the stuff that we have. So what you really need is, the first thing that I would do is I'd go out and get some of that quarter-inch grid paper at a local office supply place, and then I would draw a floor plan to your house. And you can do that yourself because the grid paper is quarter-inch per foot, so you can do that pretty easily. And then you note where the beams are, and you note the size of the joists. At that point, you can take to somebody who does basic engineering, and they can calculate how weak or strong the house is, and then pretty easily come up with a way of improving the structure. On the first floor, many times it is to add additional beams. And if you do add additional beams, you should do it following the Uniform Dwelling Code. So if you sell the house, it's been done correctly, and you want to get a permit, assuming that the jurisdiction you're in gives permits for repairs, so that you make sure that it's done right, so that if you do sell the house, there's no questions about it. You should be able to find a local engineer or even a contractor. It's really pretty simple engineering. In fact, you may find that a local lumber yard is able to take your floor plan and is able to actually calculate what you may need to add to that.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Makes perfect sense. Thank you very much.
Great. Right. Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Carol in Oak Creek. Your turn. Hi, Carol.
Thank you. Apparently, I'm allergic to my house. I take allergy pills all the time, and I'm snoring. They thought I had sleep apnea. But I went on vacation with someone, and in the hotel room, I didn't snore at all, and I didn't have to take any allergy pills. So I don't know if what I can do with my house, change carpeting, clean the ducts, get hardwood floors, or what I can do so I'm not allergic to my house.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a really good question. Let me ask you just a couple questions, Carol. How old is your house?
It was built in 1980.
Okay. 1980, okay, so that's right when construction is really changing. There are a whole bunch of things that you can check, and the next time I'm on Larry's program, I'm going to come in with the whole healthy house checklist,
and we're
going to make that available to you. I got sidetracked on this Department of Energy thing, so that's originally what I was going to do for this program, but I got excited by statistics. So I think what we need to do is to look at your house for allergens. Now again, there are home inspectors out there. Unfortunately, you're at the edge of a major metro area.
Right.
So I would look for someone who is a home inspector. And again, you can go to the ASHI website and you can look up their profiles and look for somebody who does basic indoor air quality checks.
Could you spell ASHI?
Oh, A-S-H-I.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the website is just ASHI.org.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then you can look up local Wisconsin home inspectors and uh-huh. ones in your area. If they believe that there's mold there, for a couple of $100s, you can actually have an air test done for mold. And many home inspectors actually can draw air samples now and send them into a lab that will look for volatile organic compounds and other things for them. So let's start with a home inspector as the low cost. I mean, you could hire an industrial hygienist, and they'll come over for $2,000. But let's start with a home inspector and see where we can go with that. it's possible you have mold issues. Your house is of an age where things like the formaldehyde and the plywood and things should have sort of off-gassed. The other thing you may want to check is check your HVAC equipment.
Yes, I have a high HEPA filter for HVAC.
Okay.
But the rugs are all original from when I bought the house.
Oh, dear. Yes. Those, certainly, when people have allergies, we really suggest getting rid of carpet. The dust mite situation in homes in Wisconsin can really be terrible. And it's one of these things this Department of Energy study found is a reduction in dust mites really helps a lot. And some of that is with good ventilation, good filtration, but also control of humidity. If your house is getting too humid in the summer and the winter, that may be causing dust mites. So I guess I would really think about getting rid of that carpet and putting in a different type of flooring.
What about cleaning the ducts? Is that worthwhile? I heard mixed reviews on that.
It depends upon whether they actually clean the ducts.
Oh.
There are, well, there's a company here in Madison that does a very good job of it. They have these beater-type things, and it sounds like they're tearing your house down. But it's a little thing with fingers, and it flails, and it knocks all the scale loose in the ducts, and they vacuum it out. Here's somebody who just comes in and puts a big vacuum cleaner at it, sucks on it for 5 minutes, says your ducts are clean. No, they're not. They just got the loose dust out. So I would investigate that pretty carefully. You want to be able to get before and after pictures from the contractor.
Okay.
So, and, you know, Dirty Ducks may be a franchise, and they may be one to call. I know I've worked with the ones in Madison multiple times, and they've seemed to have done a good job for clients. But do a little bit of research and make sure that we're talking about building science here, so we want some science. And science, in some cases, just means a before and after picture. So we actually know the contractor did what they're supposed to do.
But start with the home inspector that is familiar with air quality issues, you're saying.
That is correct.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks Carol, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Well, it's tax time, and Kathleen Dunn and her guests will be talking about how Americans feel about paying taxes. The answer may surprise you. That's at 1 o'clock today on the Ideas Network. Right now, taking a look at home improvement issues with our guest today, John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg, Wisconsin. Great to have him back. And certainly, thank you for listening. One open line yet at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Phil in Milwaukee. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Larry and John. Great show, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I have a mid-1980s one-story ranch. It has cedar siding over one-inch blue foam board, and there's been a chronic problem with woodpeckers drilling holes, as well as nails popping. The original construction didn't use the ring shank. I'm looking at having a contractor replace the siding with a vinyl wood grain for a similar look, and also underneath that adding a house wrap. Are there any other concerns I should be thinking about, and what are the construction methods they might use, or are there maybe even other alternative products? Basically, what I'm after is a low-maintenance, similar-look solution.
Okay.
Yeah, the better quality vinyls certainly are good products, and they are rain screens, not rain barriers. So your idea of adding a house wrap and integrating it really well is a very good idea, because even in the 1980s, we did not seal around windows and doors the way we do nowadays. So go online and take a look at the various ways that people are now talking about retrofitting window wraps and door wraps, and make sure that you find a good system. Joe Stilbrick from Building Science in Cambridge has article after article. I'm forgetting EEBA. Oh, there's a Minneapolis company that has a whole book on how to do it. And if you email me at frei@chorus.net, I will send you the website where you can order the book. In fact, you can probably even download it now. But let's go ahead and try to improve the energy efficiency of your house by stopping the infiltration and the exfiltration as you do that. A lot of people are using the cementous-type sidings, the hardy plank, the CertainTeed weatherboards. The problem we have with it is 90% of it's put on wrong. CertainTeed has had all kinds of quality issues. And I think that if you're happy with vinyl, I think that is probably the best choice for your house. I mean, my own preference, of course, is always cedar. But if you have woodpeckers, that may simply not be an option for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much. Appreciate the suggestion.
Certainly, yeah, Phil. Thanks a lot for calling. And Pete in Wales, it's your turn. Hi, Pete.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. What can we do for you?
My daughter just bought a very old up-and-down duplex, and the aluminum siding is very dirty. And the renter upstairs has really been the caretaker of the house for the last 5 or 6 years, and he said he has tried to power wash it, and it just doesn't get very clean. I'm wondering if your guest has any idea of how to clean aluminum siding, or is it best to paint it?
I had a contractor come in about three houses ago, and they had a professional power washer, and it really did a great job. And then we had it painted, and I went by the house not long ago, and now that's been 20 years, and it's still the same coat of paint on it.
Now, most of the major paint manufacturers now make paint especially for steel and vinyl siding. And you put the stuff on, and you can really expect a 25-year life. And a 2,000 PSI power washer does an awful lot. Now, there are surfactants that you can add to most power washers. I don't have a particular one. I'm much more involved in cleaning wood than cleaning metal. One of the things you may do is go to your local paint store and find a brand of paint, Pittsburgh or Pratt & Lambert or Sherwin Williams or whatever, that is specially formulated for that siding, even if you don't plan to paint it. And then take a look, and you should be able to get that online, at what they say their prep instructions are. How do they suggest cleaning it? And we're probably going to find it's power washing with a surfactant that is added to the water as the water comes out of the spray nozzle. And that is probably, that will give us professional advice from the industry, and I think is going to be smarter than anything I can come up with.
Yeah, the contractor that I hired was really a good contractor, and that thing was clean when it was finished.
And if this
go ahead. I have a power washer, and it's 1,600 PSI. Would that take it off?
It might. Part of it depends upon exactly what this is. Is this attached non-green plant growth that really has bonded to it, or is it just plain dirt and soot? Is it oily? Do you live in an area where you may get diesel fumes, like you're east of the expressway or something? Mm-hmm. Well, power washing itself may not get something that is oil-based off. So this is where you may need the surfactant to help make your water wetter.
It is in Milwaukee, and it's in a very residential area surrounded by interstates. That is true.
Yeah, so that you probably have a greasy product on there, and you're going to have to cut that grease to really get it off. Otherwise, I think the water's going to bounce off of it. So there again, go to the paint store. Go to a good paint store, not a big box. Mm-hmm. But go to somebody who specializes in paint and say, look, I'm thinking about painting this place. What should I wash this house with? It is amazing. Okay. These guys that sell paint for a living. I've got Premier here in Madison. If I have a question, it's call Phil time. He knows, these guys are professionals. They know so much about paint. It's, paint is their life.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And on to Mia in Junction City next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, my question is, what's the best way to go about obtaining a dry basement? The house was built in 1898 or so. The basement does have a concrete floor by now. The basement also, it has some windows, like it's a foot above ground level. But we have no gutters in the house, and the concrete floor is tilted so that water does, the water comes in all sides of the house. And it's tilted so that the water drains, but slowly, toward one side where it is pumped out with a sump pump. But there are no gutters on the house, and it's a stone basement wall. And so we do. We do have a dehumidifier, but we have not taken care of the actual problem of having water come into the basement.
Yeah. Right. Well, you are not going to waterproof a stone foundation wall without spending more money than you even want to think about, because I've done it on a historic property and it was awfully expensive. So you've mentioned gutters twice, and that's the first thing I'm going to mention, is you need gutters on this house, and that we need to drain those gutters at least 10 feet away from the house.
Yes, that's a question. Right. Where to drain them?
Yes. And if it's really flat around your house, now you said that the foundation is out of the ground a foot. That's great.
Yes.
Because that helps those walls breathe to the exterior. But you've got a little bit of room there to add some soil. What you really want is you want a half-inch pitch per foot for 10 feet around the house. So in other words, you want 5 inches of pitch before the downspout extensions end out there in the yard. What we need to do is get the surface water away.
Yes.
Now, you still are going to have damp soils. You might have hydrostatic head pressure. You may still have water in the basement when the water level in the soil is high, and there's nothing you can really do about that in an old stone house. But if you have a working sump pump and a dehumidifier, you can keep the air quality in the basement fairly decent. And certainly, if you have no gutters on the house, you're going to greatly reduce the wetness of the soil by simply eliminating that around the house.
Yeah. It's a very good investment, I think, in this
case. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Annette in Marshfield, your turn. Hi, Annette.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have quite a radon issue, and I'm wondering if I've seen these rubbery sealants advertised on TV. If that's painted on the walls, would that help at all?
Probably not. It would certainly be minimal. How old is your house, Annette?
1978.
Okay, so it may or may not have a vapor barrier underneath the concrete floor. Do you have any open crawl spaces that is dirt-floored crawl spaces?
No.
Okay, so everything is concrete wall, concrete floor.
Yes.
Okay, and how high out of the soil is the exterior of the foundation wall? Is it real close to grade, or is it a foot or so?
I would say at least a foot.
At least a foot. Okay, that's good. So you maybe only have 6 or 7 feet that are coming down. So you're simply in a high radon area, and there's some of those around Madison where we just get a lot of radon coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a couple things you can do. If the floor is in good condition, you can talk to a local radon contractor, and they can depressurize the area under your floor. Now, they will cut a hole in your floor, and if we find that there's sand or, better yet, pea gravel under your floor that air can move through, that's really swell. What they'll do is they'll basically glue a 4-inch pipe to your floor, and then they'll put a fan on the exterior, and that'll be a low-motion fan, you know, turns over real slowly, 24 hours a day. That will depressurize under your floor, so it'll help pick up the radon before it comes into the basement. They may look at it and say, well, this is a big basement. You need two of them. So I would start with a radon contractor. Most of these guys really know what they're doing. Many of them are franchises now. Then you want to test your house after they are done. They may not get it down to 25 picocuries per cubic deciliter, which is the European Union standard that I use, rather than the American one, which I think is too high.
Okay.
So if they cannot get it too low, then Larry and I were talking about ventilation earlier. Then what we need to do is we need to ventilate not only the basement, but your entire house. And I think then what we want to do is have you talk to a mechanical contractor and take a look at a heat recovery vent system. They used to be called air-to-air heat exchangers. Now, you're in a fairly cold area, so in the middle of winter, you don't want to open the windows to vent out the radon. What you want is a heat recovery vent system, so it takes the warm air from the interior of the house, sends it through a transfer coil so that as you're drawing that cold winter air into the house, it warms that air. So you're probably going to have to increase the air changes in the house. If your house was quite well built, and it may have been, considering where you are, it may be fairly tight. So number one, let's collect radon and try to depressurize under the floor. Number two, if we still have too much radon coming in, let's dilute that by increasing the number of air changes in your house, but let's not do it in a manner that's going to increase your utility bill.
Yeah.
That cover it pretty well?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Certainly.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And frankly, to install that in the basement, it's not a horrendously expensive operation.
That's correct, Larry. Generally, I sort of figure for each hole, PVC pipe, fan, and a little bit of wiring, needs to be done by an electrician, about $900 per unit. And if this is a smaller house, you know, maybe a 1,000-square-foot basement slab and isn't real complicated, it may only take one to do it. And part of it's going to depend on what they find underneath the floor.
Wow.
You know, if it's a house built on pea gravel, which is wonderful stuff and what we always specify now, you can really move a lot of air from underneath that floor. The other thing we should have mentioned to Annette, too, is that the radon contractor is probably going to say to her, we want to caulk all the seams around the edge, because the concrete slab shrinks in from the edge. And if we have cracks in the floor, they'll probably want to seal that as well to make that underfloor radon removal system work better. And that's, depending upon how cracked it is, that's a few extra dollars. But compared to the cost of battling lung cancer, it's cheap.
Yeah. Thanks again, Annette.
Oh, thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Lisa in Milwaukee, your turn now. Hi, Lisa.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So we have hardwood floors in our house, and they were finished with a top finish called Pacific Strong, so not polyurethane. But unfortunately, in the living room, we've had an 8x10 rug down for more years than I care to admit. And I've pulled that up, and there was a rug mat, one of those porous rug mats underneath it. But the rug itself, the back of the rug, had kind of a rubbery latex back, which has really, you know, started to pretty much disintegrate. Then the problem is when I pull the rug mat up, there is this really gritty residue on the hardwood floor that I'm wondering. I have tried taking some concentrated like vinegar and water solution, which is laborious, trying to scrape up this residue, and I'm wondering, short of sanding the floor and refinishing the whole thing, is there any kind of a solvent that could make this job a little bit easier?
Yeah, there are solvents, but you don't want to use them. And they'll also damage the finish on the floor. So whenever I've run into this, Lisa, I've advised people to simply have it sanded.
Have it sanded,
yes.
Okay.
And the sanding guys are great with this stuff. I mean, they can pull anything off the top of a floor, it seems, without destroying their belts.
Okay.
So,
and one other quick question then, as far as putting a finish on a floor, are you of the mind that it should be more of a polyurethane-based finish on hardwood?
Well, yes and no, but there are water polys and there's oil polys, just like there's water varnishes and oil varnishes now.
Okay.
You want something that is basically zero or extremely low VOC, because, again, we're focusing on health effects here.
Sure.
We do not want to put something in that house that is going to make you sick because you're breathing a volatile organic compound for a week as the floor dries.
Okay.
So just when you talk to your flooring guy, tell him that you want something that's low or zero VOC. He'll tell you what he's going to use, and then you double-check by going to the website, and you download the material handling safety data sheet.
Okay.
And that way, and of course, you hand it to him and say, this is what we're using, right?
Okay, great. All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And we had an email from Joel in Green Bay say he and his wife have a 15-year-old home with an open concept. A ranch home that has developed a fine ceiling crack parallel to the length of the house. Their builder says this is a common problem with modern open concept homes. It's not structurally related. Overall, would you agree with this assessment? And is there a remedy?
Well, one caveat, I'm imagining that this house has scissors trusses. That is, it has sort of a cathedral ceiling, not flat ceiling. Mm-hmm. It seems to be what, I think that's what open concept is. Generally, when we do specifications on those ceilings, we actually put an expansion joint right in the ceiling, which is basically a U-shaped piece of plastic with flanges, and then the painter caulks it and paints it in. And the scissors trusses, of course, do flex with snow load and wind load, and so you do get a crack up there. So I think that the builder is probably giving Joe the correct information. If it is a scissors truss system, yes, indeed, you will get a crack up there, which is why we usually suggest that the control joint be put in up there. And Joe may be able to even retrofit those by having his painter or drywall contractor come in, cut out a little bit of drywall, put a control joint in there, and then it's a nice straight line instead of something that looks sort of jagged and funny. You know, especially if Joe's going to sell the house in the next few years, maybe let's do it right.
Yeah.
And that way it won't become an issue with the home inspection.
On to Phyllis in De Pere. Phyllis, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. A few years ago, my husband and I had our house power washed, but some of the windows were etched. So do you have to check to make sure what kind of chemicals they're using when you have your house power washed?
You mean that it actually etched the glass on your windows?
Yes, it did.
Ooh, that must have been scary stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, the other thing, it's a really good point to make, Phyllis, and let me just add to it a little bit. You're completely right. The other thing we need to look at is we've got all these flower beds and bushes around most houses. We really don't want to completely kill all the landscaping. So you're right. We really need to, and this is why I always say, let's go talk to a professional, somebody who's going to steer you towards something that will work but is also safe for you, the environment, and you know the cats and dogs.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at home improvement issues with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg. We have a link to his operation on our website, The Larry Mueller Show. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to Ralph in Sparta. Ralph, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask your guest, Mr. Freiberger, about I've been hearing in the last few years a lot about these German super-insulated passive houses. I mean, insulated and tight to the point where they don't even require a furnace. In, you know, similar weather to what we have. They just have a giant heat exchanger in the basement, and they've got 60R factor insulation and all that. How is that tight? How do they handle ventilation?
The giant heat exchanger in the basement.
Yeah, that's it.
They really have to. Those houses are very, very tight. Now, who knows where the United States is going currently, but the idea was that the U.S. in about 3 years was going to require new homes to be down to half an air change per hour. Now, houses from the 50s and 60s were often 13 air changes per hour.
Oh, wow.
At 50 pascals, 50 pascals ventilation. So we're looking at much of the world, certainly Europe and the United States, was looking at really tightening up our houses and making them much more energy efficient.
Uh-huh.
So I think this is, you know, the 21st century is going to become the age of the heat exchanger. And, of course,
is that coupled with HEPA filters and whatnot? I mean, bringing the health angle in here, I mean, when you're tightening it up that much, even with the ventilation from the heat exchanger, I mean, what other measures can you take to make your house healthier?
Well, you're certainly correct about filtration. And now the problem with HEPA filtration is you need a pretty big fan sometimes to pull it.
Yeah.
A standard filter, like if you go to your local heating guy and get a Space Guard or an April Air furnace filter, nice pleated ones, those are MERV 11s. And a HEPA would be like a MERV 20. So I think a MERV 11, every time you pass the air through it, it is going to remove something like 60% of the particles.
Okay.
And certainly in Germany, they are very cognizant of of mold and
Well,
and there's a lot of diesels in Germany. So there are fine soots and things over there which they're really working to reduce. But you're quite correct. It's a mixture of the HRV and proper filtration, and then also interior filtration as well. So there should be interior air circulation in these houses, because what happens with air buoyancy is there ends up being an air differential between the first floor and the second floor. So we really
right.
need to recirculate. And when I'm designing HVAC systems for well-insulated retrofits here in Wisconsin, I'm telling people that they have to have a way of actually collecting the second floor or third floor air and sending it down to the first floor. Because they are going to have a whole lot of heat up there.
Can that be done often on the interior, or does that
have to? Yes, no, that definitely can be done in the interior with a standard furnace system, as long as we design the ducts correctly, and then we have generally a zone control so that basically you can switch your furnace to recirculation or heat scavenge.
Heat scavenge, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks, yeah. Ralph.
Thanks a lot for calling. Richard in Kokana, hello.
Hello. Good morning, gentlemen.
What can we do for you?
I have an older cabin up north that I believe has a half-log western red cedar siding on it that is real dark. There's areas where the sun has bleached it out that you can come over and actually rub it off with your hands, and I'd like to pressure wash it or remove it and actually lighten up the color. What's a good way to do that? Would it be a pressure washer, and what kind of solution would you use?
Yes, and unfortunately, I don't have it with me. But if you can get the last issue of Preservation magazine,
okay,
it talks about cleaning a Frank Lloyd Wright house. I can't remember the locality that had cypress siding. It had all turned basically the way cypress does. It just turned white and gray. And they did a lot of experimentation, came up with a cleaner, and then also a preservative. And I know the preservative is ones I've used a lot. I think it's HDV. But get a hold of Preservation magazine. You might even be able to get the article online. And I can't remember the name of the Frank Lloyd Wright house, but it was a Frank Lloyd Wright house, and they put all kinds of money into studying how to clean the siding. And, of course, I saved the issue, but I didn't make a note because I didn't know you're calling today.
There we go.
Quick question is, there is a couple spots where I have to repair some of the siding.
Yes.
Where would I find some replacements?
Oh, you can get half-log siding all over the place.
But is it western red cedar? I've seen some cedar. It's white, eastern white cedar.
Yeah, and it's not very good. You know, you're probably going to have to check with a local lumber supplier or go online looking for western red. And you're probably looking at cutting a little Dutchman. You know, if you get a bunch of 10-foot lengths, you're probably going to have enough to do repairs for years, as long as you do it nice and carefully and seal those joints with something like Gorilla Glue. Remember to wet it so that the glue expands and completely fills the joint entirely. But you should be able to do a pretty nice, neat job as long as you can find some matching siding.
Real good.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Richard. And Robin in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Robin.
Hi. I am calling about my mother's home. My 94-year-old mother recently relocated. And we will need to sell her home. The basement is finished it's an exposed basement, with the exception of the floor. It's a cement floor, and it's not finished. I am not a fan of carpeting. I don't really want to do laminate there either. I was wondering about some staining or painting application if you could recommend anything like that.
Well, it depends. One of the concerns that I have is if there is moisture drive through the floor, because that could cause almost anything to loosen. Now, what is the reason for painting this floor?
Well, we would like to finish the floor because the rest of the space is finished, mm-hmm. and we will need to sell her home to, you know, help pay for her
sure.
hair.
Well, why don't we just let the buyers finish the floor?
Because they will not count the space.
Because it has an unfinished floor? Oh, my.
If you have an unfinished floor, it doesn't count on the sale of the home.
Okay. Well, all right. Let's see if we can maybe do this. There's a company called Meadows, just like a meadow with a letter S at the end. Meadows makes all kinds of nice concrete ceiling products. Meadows makes ones called Vocomp, V-O-C-O-M-P. Vocomp is basically, it's like an acrylic floor wax. You can put it on with a mop after you clean the floor. It comes in various glosses, and I think the Vocomp 25 looks like glass. Sure. So what you take a look at Meadows Vocomp. You might be able to get 5 gallons of that. Clean the floor, put it on the floor. The floor will be nice and bright and shiny and waxy looking, and then buy a cheap but cute throw rug and put it in the middle of the floor, and let's call it quits. Okay. And I know the Vocomp is not going to fail. It's not going to peel because we use it for sealing driveways and sealing garages. So I think that's a real inexpensive solution to make it look finished.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. That's a happy person there. Mary in Greenleaf, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a new home.
Okay.
The powder room, when somebody uses the powder room, I can hear everything that goes on in that room.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. What can I do?
Well, it's really difficult. The problem is the sound is transmitted through the studs in the wall.
Uh-huh.
The only way to really do it is to put sound matting against the wall, either in the inside or the outside, and the inside is probably very difficult. Do you have an inch or two on the exterior of this, that not inside the powder room, but outside the powder room, where you could put on basically another layer of wall?
Yes, actually.
Okay.
It adjoins the dining area.
Okay, that's what you're going to need to do. You're going to, now, sound mat, you should be able to take a look online at sound matting. It's often put in floors, but it's also put in walls, because certainly in these new condominiums and these high-rises, we're always specifying sound matting in the flooring so that you don't hear the neighbors upstairs tromping along. So
uh-huh.
You're going to have to put that in, and then you're probably going to have to put drywall up over it. I don't know whether you can put the sound mat up and then install the drywall with screws right through the sound mat, or whether you're going to have to put furring strips. I'm not certain about that.
Okay.
But do a little bit of research online. Just Google sound mat and then look at the installation instructions. You're going to find probably 7, 8, 9 companies that make this stuff.
Okay.
And that will absorb and reflect the sound backwards.
Great.
All right.
Okay. Yes. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, right next to the dining room, that's probably not the...
At least the door doesn't open into the dining room as well.
Angie in Mauston, hello.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just curious about the sidewalk that runs along our house. It's a 1930s construction. I think that the sidewalk is as old as the house, possibly. But it's uneven, and I am exploring using either... cement jacking or mud jacking, and would like to know if one is better than the other long term, and if there's any way to avoid the ugly holes that are put in when they inject whatever it is that is injected into the sidewalk or under it.
Mm-hmm. The ugly holes, depending, unless it's a very narrow sidewalk, are probably going to be a fact of life. Generally, there's a third option, which is called foam jacking.
Foam?
Foam, yeah, F-O-A-M. Well, we know we have expansive foams, right? And
uh-huh.
So if you pump an expansive foam and it pushes the sidewalk up and then hardens, you know, the problem with mud jacking is it's fine silts, and that can simply, if we've got water running under the sidewalk, can simply leave over time and drop. The concern that I have regarding this, Angie, is you said this is a 1930s sidewalk. There may not be much concrete left there.
I'm not sure.
Well, you probably need to take a hammer drill and drill a little hole someplace and see what you got for concrete. I'm a little concerned that if we add some high pressure underneath it, this is just going to break up. How big a sidewalk is this? Is this a large one?
No, it's about, I'd say, a foot and a half wide. It's a
uh-huh.
narrow one.
And how long?
Well, it runs the length of our lot, which I think is 100. No, it's 80 or 120. I forget which.
Wow, that is a long sidewalk. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm sorry. The whole lot is that long, but to the garage, it's probably about 80. But it's in segments of each segment's about 2 feet long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm real concerned about the age. If you do have somebody foam jacket, make sure you can get some sort of warranty that if they break it, they own it. We call that the pottery shop warranty, I think that's called. You break it, you own it.
Okay.
If this is really thin, consider just having it taken up and putting in a paver sidewalk. You know, you can do a paver sidewalk yourself.
Yeah.
Hopefully you have a decent base underneath there. You'd get some lime fines brought in. Well, and the other thing that's happened, this is 1930s, right? So we've had 87 years. So is the grass now taller than the sidewalk, so the sidewalk acts like a ditch?
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Oh. Okay, well, let's get rid of that sidewalk. All right, so let's have a landscaper come in and take that sidewalk out for you because you don't want to do that. Have them deliver some pavers for you. And some lime fines, maybe have them put the lime fines and tamp them. And you can buy a case of beer and get some friends over, and you'll enjoy laying that sidewalk.
Okay.
And then it'll be up. You can lay it a half inch higher than the grass, so in 15 years it'll all be level. And if it ever moves, you just pull up a couple of bricks and redo it.
I
don't think you're going to have a real good result with the jacking, and you know, nice warm pavers might look real sweet.
Okay, and are those difficult to have a snowblower go over?
Not if you lay them correctly, not at all.
Okay, all right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger, our guest today of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg. We're going to take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be right back. You stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at home improvement. Maybe some improvement around your home today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg, Wisconsin. It's great to have him along, and certainly I hope you join in. All our lines are filled right now. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Let's jump right back into the phones and to Roberta in Waukesha. Roberta, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because we live in a 90-year-old frame two-story house that we have been cooling with window air conditioners, and we're thinking of going to central air and wondering if it's doable. There are no cold air returns upstairs.
Okay.
Now, Roberta, what sort of heat do you have now? Do you have forced air heat, or do you have a boiler and radiators?
We have forced air heat.
Oh, okay. That should be fairly simple.
You
want to talk to an HVAC contractor who knows something about old houses, and you're correct. You need to get a high return up to the second floor. Now, here's a question for you. Does your house have a chimney?
No, we had that removed when we put in our new furnace.
Wonderful. Don't you have the big hole in your house then?
No, the chimney is still standing from the roof down, but there is no hole there.
Is the chimney on the outside of the house or is it on the inside?
Inside.
Okay, why don't we get rid of that chimney?
Get rid of the chimney?
Certainly.
Okay.
You don't want to maintain it above the roof anyway. And then you're going to have this 2x2 hole in your house for heat, for high returns from the second floor. And you can have that laundry chute you've always wanted.
Well, the chimney doesn't extend above the roof.
Okay, it's just in the attic.
Just in the attic and going down to the...
Wonderful. So it's even easier. So you can find a contractor who can demo that for you. Then your HVAC guy can come in and balance, have a beautiful balance, high-efficiency system. I'm constantly happy when I inspect a house and they've got an old chimney and I go, wonderful. We can take this out because we're going to get all this space that we really need to make the system work correctly.
Great. Great. Okay. Thank you for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. I had a friend who took his own chimney out piece by piece.
I took down one, Larry, that was 44 feet tall. I'll tell you that story sometime.
Oh, boy. Michael in Iowa County. Hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Well, I have a similar problem, only we don't. We have hot water, heat, and radiators, and we need to cool this house. And we were wondering that those outside units that put in, the units in different rooms.
Right. The Mitsubishis, the mini splits. Yeah. Those certainly are an option. And a lot of people are handling those now. Certainly in Iowa County, you're going to find some good HVAC people. Another option is high velocity. Google High Velocity, Unico is going to be one company, or there are three companies that make them. What they do, Michael, is they have very small ducts. In fact, I think the outside of the trunk line, the ducts, I believe, are only 3 inch. So you can sneak them through walls and all kinds of places. They use high pressure rather than the volume of the ducts to get the same amount of cubic feet per minute that you need. So that would be a second way of looking at it. And, of course, the third way is the traditional large duct system. And again, that's always a little bit difficult in a house because you've got to find a way to get through the various floors. And sometimes people put the ducts in the attic, which I try to avoid. So take a look at the Unico. The mini splits will work. And you have multiple options there.
All right.
It's also a heat pump. Now, are they efficient heating part of the time, part of the year?
Yes, depending upon what you put into it. If they are a heat pump with a reversing valve, you can indeed use them. The one reason I like to avoid the mini splits is I'm really big on air change. Now, maybe your house is so old that it's really, really leaky. But even a lot of these old farmhouses, as we tighten them up over time, I really like to have a way of introducing fresh air. And the best way to distribute that is through a duct system rather than a ductless system.
All right. There we go. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Charlie emailed to say he's recommended an older farmhouse near Madison, including vapor barrier throughout the interior. The house has a blown-in insulation from the 60s, which seemed good, and he left it in place, but it may have settled some in places and been inadequate in others. He's residing now. Would he be able to put a 1-inch styrofoam on the exterior before, he puts on the siding? Is that an issue, or is that a possibility?
Yes, it is. Now, what's nice about Charlie, he's done everything right. The first thing he did, or not the first thing, he knew he had insulated walls, and he had an old house, and he's trying to avoid condensation. So he put on an interior vapor barrier, and Larry, less than 10% of the people do it. And it's actually required by the Department of Interior if you own a historic house. You cannot insulate unless you put in the vapor barrier. So I just wanted to comment on that.
Good.
For our listeners. The next two items is we always talk about air intrusion. So I would hope that Charlie maybe is going to be stripping this down right to the sheathing, re-nail the sheathing if it needs it or re-screw it, and then go ahead and put your wind wrap on the house, then go ahead and put your 1-inch foam on it. Now, if he's going to use cedar siding, we cannot put cedar siding against 1-inch foam. We have to use a rain screen system. And rain screen system is available, nice set of drawings from the Forest Products Laboratory here in Madison. Or if you just Google rain screen, you'll get all sorts of information on rain screen systems. We suggest the rain screen system where you're furring out over the blue foam with 1/2 inch or 3/8 inch strips for every type of siding except for vinyl, where it really is not necessary. But even the cement board siding really benefits from it.
Melissa in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Question about VOCs. How long do they last in the air after a wall's been painted or a carpet's been installed?
It depends. Some have been studied, some haven't. I was just reading a study, if you recall, the bad flooring that came out of Lumber Liquidators. They found that the half-life on the VOCs in it was 78.1 years.
Oh.
So some of these things, the VOCs take a long, long time to come out. So I think really when we're looking at wall paint, let's look at the either zero VOC or low VOC and simply not have to worry about it. You're putting on a much thinner layer than you are if you're putting in new carpet, if you're putting in new subflooring, or if you're putting in new laminate manufactured in China flooring. But still, it's a little bit of concern. I think that you're probably looking, this is sort of the what do you call those things? The hockey stick sort of graph. It decreases very gradually.
Okay.
Now, you should be able to get the information directly. So let's say you call Sherman Williams and they've got whatever paint. It has some VOCs. You should actually be able to go to their tech support and say, look, how long do I have to worry about the VOCs coming out of the paint? And they should have an answer for you, because most companies have not studied this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Anne in Monona called to ask if she should be concerned because her contractor put up the put up tile in her bathroom and used oriented strand board and plywood as underlayment.
Well, I hope this isn't in like a shower area. She doesn't.
Well, it's a bathroom.
Well, it's a bathroom. Okay. Well, we have some new products that have been developed in the last 10 years for tile. And so I am seeing OSB and plywood on walls, but then there is a plastic waffle sort of orange material called Dutra, and also comes in a fabric as well, that is supposed to work really, really well. It's a complete water barrier. So maybe what they did is they used OSB to have a really hard surface behind it, and then the tile person put up this water barrier, which is waffled so that the glue sticks to it well. So it's possible that it has been done right. So let's just call the contractor and ask for some details.
There we go. Rob in Hortonville, excuse me. Your turn. Hi, Rob.
Hello. How you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm in the process of having a contractor come out and putting a drainage in my basement.
Okay.
And re-cementing it. And so it drains. I don't have a wet basement at the, you know, now. What I'm trying to do is a, like a preventive maintenance, I guess. He's doing that and then putting like a membrane type thing over the walls of the basement. And my question is, what or if there's anything to put on the floor of the basement?
Are you putting the water collection membrane on the walls because the walls leak a lot?
No, they don't. Nothing leaks at all. I'm just doing a, because eventually what I would like to do is completely finish off my basement. So
okay. I'm always concerned about when we put vapor-tight membranes over concrete walls because the walls do breathe out some moisture. And if your house is built really close to the ground, you know, and some houses only have an inch or two, if that moisture can't bleed out of that concrete wall, it has a tendency to go up and goes into the wood. And we're finding houses with rotted off joists and ring joists. So be cognizant that concrete needs to breathe. Now, if your house is a foot and a half out of the ground, well, that's swell. That still works. But think a little bit about this this wall membrane. It sounds a little bit worrisome. As far as the floor, I don't know of a vapor barrier that works on the top of the floor. On a new house, we are required to put a vapor barrier underneath the floor before we pour the concrete.
Okay.
There are certainly sealers that you can put on the floor. I'd mentioned Meadows Volcomp earlier. You could go to the Meadows website, which is very professional, and take a look and see what Volcomp or the other metal sealers might do for you. And, of course, they have tech support. They have an 800 number, and you can email them. So okay. You may want to tell them what you're attempting to achieve. But generally, if you've got vapor pressure, water pressure under the floor, it is going to push through anything put on top of the floor.
Okay.
Be very careful when you finish your basement. Avoid the use of things like drywall. Avoid the use of white wood, that is non-treated wood. Avoid anything that can easily grow mold.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I eventually want to make this as an additional living space because I had an egress window put in.
Yes.
And obviously I'm trying to achieve the... I granted my taxes may go up, but I'm also trying to utilize the whole house.
Sure, certainly. And as long as you have the egress window, it may even be legal to put a bedroom down there as long as your window is equal to 7 or 8% of the square footage of the room and half of it opens and all of that sort of thing. Take a look rather than worry too much about vapor barrier on the floor, take a look at using a tile floor. Don't use carpet. I would avoid things like the laminates if this is an older house. And try to stick with a ceramic, maybe even with a porcelain like Crossville tile, so that if you do get some moisture down there, it is not going to be an issue for you.
Yeah,
right.
Good points. Thanks, Rob. Appreciate the call. Irene and Phillips, your turn. Hi, Irene.
Yes, hi, gentlemen. I have a question regarding what to put on my metal roof to prevent the snow and ice slides from killing someone down below.
Yeah.
Okay. If you go online, you will find that almost every metal roofer makes things that are called snow stoppers. And they many of them glue to the roof. They have a metal-to-metal adhesive. And basically, they're just like a little flange or something that stops the snow from sliding off. Depending upon the height of your roof, you may need one or two rows. Do you know which manufacturer made your roof?
Not exactly. I don't recall. No.
You should be able to go online. Just Google metal roofing manufacturers. Find a good one that has a standing seam, completely closed, hidden fastener type roof. And they should show you some snow guards on there. If they don't have them, send them an email. And then find out the adhesive. Most likely, your metal roof has what's called a Kynar coating, which is a real high-quality paint that will not come off if you glue something to it.
Uh-huh.
But it'd be nice if you could find out who put that roof on. Do you know how old it is?
5 years old.
5 years old. And you put it on?
My contractor put it on.
Okay, well, let's call your contractor and find out what he used. And if it's International Metal Products, then let's call International Metal Products. Or call your contractor. He may be perfectly happy to come back and do a little more work for you and glue on those snow guards.
Thanks so much. I appreciate the help.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for calling. And Jean in Clintonville, your turn. Hi, Jean.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm enjoying all the information I'm getting. My question is about subway tile on a kitchen wall. You've spoken to doing tiling in bathrooms and that sort of thing. We're remodeling the kitchen, going to put cabinets on the bottom, the countertop, and then going with subway tile up to probably the top of the window frame. Because when we took the old cabinets off, we kind of wrecked the wall.
Yeah.
But it does have dry. It's an old house that has lath plaster and reasonably new, I mean, it's level drywall.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if anything special has to be put under that drywall or under the tiles before, you know, applying them.
Are you going to have a backsplash on your countertop so that the tiles will not get wet?
What do you mean?
Well, most countertops have you've got the 2-foot-wide flat area, and then against the wall they come up anywhere from 2 to 4 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a little backsplash.
Mm-hmm.
So if you tip over the whatever full of water, it doesn't hit the tile.
Oh, well, we're going to have a cutting board countertops.
Okay, so like then the subway tile is going to come right down to those countertops.
Well, I hadn't thought that through.
Oh, okay. Well, we were talking about this Ditra, this orange stuff. Talk to your tile guy, because what he can use is there is a fabric. It's a orange fiberglass fabric that he can glue on the wall that gives it some water resistance. The other concern that I have is you've got old lath and plaster, and you've been banging around in there.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the keys on the back of that plaster may have broken loose and fallen down the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So that plaster may not all be 100% tight. So if we put this very thin fabric, like 32nd or 16th of an inch over it, that is going to glue that whole wall together. And it's probably going to cost you $50 to do the entire room.
Oh, wow.
But it's probably going to enhance your performance by 100%.
Now, the lath in the plaster has drywall over that.
Well, that's
it
helpful.
Tiles would be attaching to drywall,
mm-hmm.
but that's the other stuff is what's
Yeah,
done
I think
going.
I would still use this orange stuff because it does give you protection against water so that if we end up with a bunch of water running backwards or flooding the wooden countertop and getting up against the tile, that we don't loosen anything up. Talk. Make sure you've got a good quality tile installer. Talk to them. You know, they're the professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And do a little bit of research online on tile backers to make sure that you get the best possible product. Because you may be living with that tile for the next 50 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And also remember to talk to them about grout sealers.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, then you butcher the chicken there on the wood block, and, you know, we don't want the grout to turn red. So...
So think of,
I'm informed by looking at 44 years of disasters, which is why I come up with these odd thoughts.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, thank you. That's very helpful.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Mike in Milwaukee, have you got a question for us?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a 1930 vintage home that I moved into recently, and it... originally had a coal furnace, evidently, because it's got a coal storage bin accessible off the basement. It's buried and has grass and dirt, you know, above it because it's outside of the building envelope. But the this particular coal storage bin had been reconfigured to be a wine cellar. And it looks like it had been maybe painted with some sort of a sealing type of a paint or material to keep water out, because the hatchway is a place for water to ingress into this area. And we get water with every single rainstorm, and I'm trying to figure out what I should do to try to correct water from coming into this wine cellar area.
Okay. Well, the first thing is, we talked about this a little bit earlier with the lady with the stone foundation, is we need to make sure that we've got gutters and drainage, try to keep the surface water away. Generally, 90%+ of the water coming into houses is surface water that's coming down into the soil. And sometimes you're in a really flat neighborhood, and it's just really, really difficult. The other possibility is, if the water is coming in high on the wall, it's surface water. If it's coming in where the wall and the floor meet together, then it's hydrostatic head pressure. Do you know which it is?
Yeah, the area where it's coming in is an access port where the coal would be dumped into this unit. So it's away from the actual...
Oh, okay. So it's got the old steel door on there. Well, why don't we just fill that with masonry and then waterproof it on the exterior with a waterproof cement?
That's why I'm calling you.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Let's do that. Let's have a mason come in and fill that in with concrete brick and then parge it on the exterior, and that should take care of it. And besides, you're losing a lot of heat through that little steel scuttle anyway.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, John, here we are out of time. Boy, it's flown by. You'll be back in June, on June 8th, I believe.
I believe that is correct,
and we will,
Larry.
And we'll do that, and we're going to talk some more about healthy homes.
I'm hoping that I'm able to get past the copyright issues on the healthy home checklist so that we can offer that to our listeners. And I'm sorry we couldn't get to everybody who's waiting on the phone and email today.
A lot of emails, too, so... What? That's the way it goes. John, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Larry.
John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg. He'll be back on June 8th. We'll do it all over again. Tomorrow, look for Garden Talk. We'll take a look at environmental gardening with Ben Fuda. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store.